Welcome to the VPNG podcast, where we deep dive into the world of the perioperative nursing profession. I'm your host, Elise Coffey, and joining me is my incredible co-host, Kate Mitchell.
Hey there. So thrilled to be here chatting about all things periop with you, Elise. Get ready, folks, because we're about to take you on a journey through the operating room and beyond.
Absolutely. We're not just two nurses, we're your periop pals, your scrub-wearing sidekicks, here to spill the tea on the ins and outs of the perioperative nursing profession. Whether you're a seasoned OR veteran or just curious about what happens behind those double doors, we've got you covered.
We're keeping it casual, chatty, and full of laughs because, let's face it, the periop life is an adventure and we're all in it together. So grab your favourite scrubs, pour a cup of coffee, and let's get this periop party started.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for listening. Today, we are joined by Dr. Stefan Bajusha, who's an associate professor at a university here in Melbourne. He's joining us today to talk to us about his career progression. Stefan, can you introduce yourself to our listeners?
Yeah, so my name is Stefan. I'm an associate professor in nursing and I'm also associate head of school international. And I'm a registered nurse. Worked in the clinical area for 16, 17 years before jumping across to academia.
And where's that accent from, Stefan?
So it's Australian.
Can you say that again? It's Australian.
I do have an Australian passport, but I was born in France. And Mike, I have got a little kind of a journey that is unusual in nursing, or can't say usual in nursing, because nursing, as we know, is a really global profession. So I did my initial training in France, and I worked a few years in France before going and working 10 years in the UK. So I was fortunate enough to know the joy of the NHS before the recession and before it went a little bit challenging in there. And after 10 years in the NHS, I actually took a big step and got a job as a registered nurse in Darwin in the emergency department. And that's how I ended up in Australia 14 years ago now.
So did you plan that or just see a job advertised in Darwin?
So this is a really interesting point, because I think a lot of the moves that I have made in my career so I have been very fortunate to be mentored by a lot of great people, and I think we can talk about mentoring a bit later, but it's also a lot of it has been born out of frustration in a way. So this is how I kind of progressed in my career.
And I can imagine that frustration resonates with our listeners.
And you know, and I think there's two ways to deal with frustration. It's like you walk away. Well, actually, probably three ways. You get really upset, really annoyed, and it brings you down.
Yeah.
Then it makes you walk away, or it makes you see things differently and want you to be part of what's kind of changing the system a little bit. I'm not saying I am managing to change everything, but being a little grain of sand in that system that you can try to improve and try to iron out this frustration by doing something about it rather than being passive.
And Kate, you're very clinical. So do you see a lot of nurses who are in that limbo of I want to be able to change the world, or I want to make a difference, but don't know how to go about it?
Yeah, I am. A lot of, particularly now more than ever, since we've had COVID and things like that, a lot of the nurses or a lot of nurses I know are actually very frustrated. They want to delve more. They want to progress their career more. And a lot of the time, either the space or the workplace they're in at the time doesn't give them career progression opportunities, or they actually want to try something different. And so I guess, does that resonate a little bit with you, Stefan, in that, like, obviously your frustration has then progressed you to seek out these different opportunities?
Yeah, I think it is about seeking out opportunities based on frustration. What can I do about it, really, was for me what's, you know, yes, I am frustrated. I don't like the way I'm treated. I don't like the way this place is run. What can I do to help? What can I do to change that in a way? And so when you asked Elise about whether my career was planned, it wasn't as so much as it was planned that I had a backup plan.
Right, because I would tell you mine hasn't been planned either.
But it wasn't like I decided to do that. If I took that step, I knew that it didn't work out, I could do something else. I always had a backup plan.
Yeah.
And I never went somewhere without a plan. So I think that's really important to. And I think.
So you didn't sit down and map your 20-year career, you mapped your next step.
Yes, that's right. And I think it's really hard, I think, for us as nurses, because it's a different way of seeing the world. It's like, you know, when you become a registered nurse and you work on the floor in any setting, you have things you have to do. So it's very, very task orientated rather than being goal orientated. And I think to plan a career, you need to be goal orientated. You cannot be task orientated. And that's why it's a little bit challenging for a lot of us to do that. And I don't think I can say that in hindsight, because at the time when I was looking at opportunities, it's not the way I was looking at it. You know, it wasn't goals. It was really, what can I do? But then reflecting upon it, it was really, I had some goals. And I'll try to make it, to make them work with a backup plan.
And was your backup plan always going back to clinical nursing, or was it different? Or was he like, I'll go be a flight attendant, or I'll go be a travel agent?
I did try to be a flight attendant. That didn't work out. I went for an interview and that was it.
I could not imagine you as a flight attendant, Stefan.
Well,
you love to travel though.
I love to travel, and I think that's what attracted me. And now in hindsight, that probably would have been a bad move, because there would have been a lot of frustration there. Yes. So I think that's... yes, you know that you can always go back a step, which is what I did when I went to Darwin. I went down to being a level 2, you know, nurse 2 on the floor, which was, you know, so you know you can always do that. When I moved to England, I didn't resign from my job in France. I took a sabbatical, so I could always go back to that. So, you know, that's what I meant in having a plan.
Yeah.
Thinking
you weren't always stuck if it didn't work out.
No. Yeah. When I went to academia, I thought, well, if that doesn't work out, I can always go back to the clinical space.
I feel like every academic thinks that too.
Yeah, so there's that. But you know, it is also a different way of thinking being in academia. It's about moving from the task to the goals again. So that's the same thing. And I think, and I don't know that we do that very well with nursing, in terms of we don't help nurses to plan a career.
Yeah.
You know, it is normal in industry to help people plan their career, and we don't do that. I think we focus on the patient, on other people.
Yeah, we're there to patients, help other people through,
and we don't think about us, because we think it's selfish to do that.
Yeah.
And then we end up with people that are frustrated and want to make a move. So I think, so that's my kind of philosophy, is that we need to look out for people that show sign that they want to do something different and support these people.
And so have you intentionally sought out opportunities and roles, or have you kind of let that path unfold organically for you?
There's been the two aspects, because you can't plan everything, and you can't, but it's about having, you know, it's about having the right deck of cards. So it's about doing the thing that, so if you look at my role in the school at the moment, I'm International Associate Head of School International. And in order to be able to do that, well, I needed to know about the international landscape. I needed to know some people in the university. So I networked, that did this kind of thing. I also sought some mentoring. So, you know, it's about doing this thing. I'm also the president of the Australasian College for Infection Prevention and Control. And I joined the college in 2012. So, and it's now 2023, so 11 years ago. I've been on the board for 4 years before being president-elect. And it was about, you know, I wanted to do something. So my research is infection prevention and control. So I wanted to do something in that space. And the thing to do was to join the college. And then you had to get to know people. So it is a bit of work. I didn't think I would go for president a few years ago. And then here we are. But it kind of was natural progression. So you give yourself some goals and you work towards some of this thing, putting this card in your deck could give you different skills.
And so listeners might not be aware, but as an academic, we have research responsibilities, teaching and service, which is your international portfolio. That's challenging. Having those three arms can be challenging. So how do you manage your time, your priorities, and staying productive to fulfill your role, but also by not becoming frustrated and laying, I guess, the foundations for your next step?
Yeah, well, I'm not quite sure what the next step is, so that's I'm still working that out. Because I'm in a fairly good space at the moment and I enjoy what I'm doing. It is, if you're an academic and listening to that, it's extremely challenging to balance the three roles. It's just about, I don't know how to, it's about, again, thinking of where you want, what you want to do next. And you know that as an academic, well, when I joined the university, I didn't have a PhD. And I thought, well, if I want to stay in this place, I need a PhD. So that's what I did. My first step was to do that PhD. If I want to stay in here, I really need to do a bit of research and publish. So that was the next step. And also, but the publishing came alongside with the mentoring in a way, because I absolutely really enjoy mentoring research students.
Yeah.
So having people, supervising people doing honours, masters, PhD for that side of the research is really what.
So that leads me to my next question. For listeners, Stefan is a career mentor of mine, but how do you approach mentoring students or other academics like me? And what advice do you typically give them regarding career paths? Because as a nurse before I came into academia, and I don't know if Kate is similar, because I've given Kate similar advice. I was doing a master's years and years ago now, and I was told nurses don't need masters. Why are you doing that? Yeah. I was never advised to do a minor thesis or anything like that. It wasn't until I met people like Stefan that I got that advice and made similar career steps. But Kate, do you receive mentoring?
I received mentoring from, funnily enough, a couple of other academics and everything that I met through BPNG. So before then, essentially everyone I spoke to is like, nah, just on the floor experience is good enough. That's how you show you're a good nurse. You don't need further development in your career and stuff, unless you want to go into academia, or unless you want to leave nursing and do something that's not on the floor. And so it's very interesting, I guess, the old ways of thinking. However, funnily enough, I had a conversation with one of my managers last week in relation to masters and things like that. And she herself said she used to be under the impression that you don't need anything further. However, any job that you go for nowadays in relation to nursing, it's a preference. They have further education and everything to stand you out from the crowd. So definitely I got my mentoring from people I met through BPNG, and they're higher educated people as well. But yes, Stefan, I guess, how do you help your students and mentor your students, and what advice do you give them in relation to this conversation?
I mean, obviously, I think the mentoring side is quite personal, in terms of you have to have this relationship. You have to know the person a little bit. But for me, it's about taking people with you, first of all, identifying people that have got the potential, that want to do stuff, and taking them with you. So giving people opportunities. So you have to do that, especially in academia. You can't make it on your own. It's about being given opportunities and being taken along with other people that have got experience. But it's also one of the things I do is that I recommend people, it's the same thing as the plan B thing, is that don't do thing that will close a door to something or would make it, so if you do a master's, do a thesis.
Yep. Otherwise you've hit the ceiling.
Yeah.
Because you've got your graduate certificate, graduate diploma in that specialty. That's all you need. You don't need a master in a full specialty. do a thesis. Just keep that door open. So then if in 2 years' time you've changed your mind and you want to do further research, you want to do a PhD, you can do it. You don't have to jump through another hoop to do that.
And for all those people listening saying they'll never do a PhD, I was one of those people and I had to go back and do an honours. And now I'm doing a PhD post-masters. And
well, yes. I'm doing my master's via minor thesis at the moment because it was advised to me to go down that way to then possibly progress to a PhD, which currently at the moment that would be years away because the master's is doing my head in. However, it is the option.
It is the option. It's about having the option. It's about being, you know, it's about having people you can rely on to mentor you, to take you along for, you know, on some project. And it's about having options to do things. So that's really, you know, I don't think there is an ideal way of mentoring people. It's very, very personal. I had people, you know, some of the mentoring I've had has been very informal. Some has been very formal. In the UK, we do something called clinical supervision. Social work do that. We don't do that for nursing in Australia. So I was very fortunate, and that's how, you know, I moved from a nurse in intensive care to being a charge nurse for a few surgical wards through that process, then progressed by that. So it was really, but it's about people believing in you as well. You know, I mean, I've made some connection when I studied a Master's of Public Health, and then made friends through that, who then employed me in. So it's also the people you meet.
You've just led on to my next question about networking. So sometimes people find that networking really difficult, or I guess confronting, especially if you're not naturally extroverted. Can you share some experiences where networking has played a role in advancing your career? And did you have any tips for our listeners about how to make small talk mean something?
It's really hard because I'm not a natural in that. If I go to a conference, I would rather just grab a cup of coffee and maybe lock myself in a toilet and not speak to anybody. But it's about making that effort. Networking has helped me to become the president of the college because I got known. And then people start talking to you. It's also one of the things I've realized just you need to surround people by people you want to be with, you know. Yeah. So you, and to do that, you have to talk to people and you have to meet people. You can't just, things don't just happen.
Yeah. People, you've got to make your own opportunities, don't you?
That's what the networking does. And I know it's cringeworthy and it's very hard for a lot of people. And I mean, I'm the first one to say I find it hard, but it's part of, so, you know, joining a professional organization like BPNG, like Acorn, is, if you're in that area, it's one of the first things to do. And then becoming active in that organization.
Coming to conferences.
Started talking and then volunteering to do some work on a committee. It's not a lot, but it's also giving back to the community and the professional community in that sense.
I think that's really important.
I don't
important.
Know if that's answered the question.
Yeah, no, it has. I think that's really important. We had a previous guest on who was one of our trade partners, and he was talking about how he feels delegates are scared to come and talk to trade because they think things are going to be sold to them. But that in itself is a networking opportunity because you don't know what that relationship with that trade person can lead to in the future
That's right. And, at the college, that relationship with trade has allowed us to get some funding to do a special grant for sustainability in infection prevention and control that we're going to announce in a few months, exactly the details. But, you know, so that came from just the networking.
And then
you get invited to things, you get a little bit more opportunities.
So research evolves over time. It's part of your role as an academic to be a researcher. You're an infection prevention expert. How has your research focused evolved and shifted over your time? And were you always interested in infection? How did you get into infection?
I've always been interested. I worked in HIV AIDS at the beginning of my career, which was in 96, which was a very different landscape than it is now.
So, was that in the UK or in France?
No, this was in France. Yep. And I was helping people access care, so it's through disadvantaged populations, such as intravenous drug users, sex workers, all that. So I had a job helping people access the right care. And we didn't have the medication we had now, so it was very challenging because there was a lot of people my own age dying every day. I also worked, when I did my nursing, I worked in infectious disease as a care assistant during the summer. So there's always, and I was a volunteer and I was on the board actually of an HIV organization already at that time. So there's always been a little bit of interest in that. So you say, as my research evolved, yes and no, I'm looking, what I do is I look at what factors make people not follow guidelines.
Yeah.
And that is so broad that, you know, it's fake. And it really started on safe sex, why people don't wear condoms, this kind of thing. And then it moved on to standard precaution and thinking, well, I mean, it's not quite the same, but it's... You need to wear gloves to protect yourself when you're taking blood. Why don't people wear gloves? We know what to do. So that's how it started. And now it's still around that, but also other aspects of infection prevention. And I think one of the things that the pandemic made me reflect on is that how we use infection prevention as punitive measures.
Yes.
Especially in settings like residential aged care settings. And I just think I've never really been, you know, interested into doing a lot of work in aged care but I think that's the work I'd like to do next, is looking at how we can be this measure a bit more compassionate for the people there, rather than using IPC as punition.
So for our listeners, I think this comes to networking, Stefan. During the pandemic, Stefan was an expert that people phoned and asked, mm-hmm. and what's his advice in this space based on your infection prevention research and your profile.
Yeah.
So for anyone sitting there thinking, oh, research is boring, think of just all the topics you talked about I find really interesting, but it's led to so much other opportunity for you.
Yes, I was able to talk about which way to hang toilet paper on the radio.
Were you?
Yes.
Oh, so mullet or not mullet?
Yes.
Yes, okay. Which is the proper way, Stefan?
Well, the proper way is not facing the wall, but
it's going to be controversial.
It's not really. It's just common sense, which is probably something that doesn't exist. No, I mean, we had this discussion was more about raising awareness of the risks that you have in setting like toilets, which sounds thrilling, but it was quite an interesting interview. So yes, I've done a few things like that. That's where research led me. But no, my research is more about people's behavior. So you can do that in a lot of settings, but
And before we wrap up, so for your clinical nurse who's listening to us talk about this who's currently feeling like they might need a change or they're feeling frustrated about current state of play, what's your advice to them?
What's the advice? Is think about where that frustration comes from. Seek out a mentor if you don't have one and have discussion with a mentor. Have some really meaningful and candid conversation about what is it that frustrates you? How can you be part of change rather than walking away? How can you, be the person that is going to take a step in the right direction and show some leadership and this kind of thing to help that solving the situation? And I know it's easy to walk away. So, and that's what we want to do, fight or flight. So, yes, just...
Kate, do you have anything else for Stefan?
No, everything you said resonates with me because I'm a planner like you. I usually have a backup plan and then also a plan B, C and D if my backup plan fails in relation to career progression and also looking at opportunities and things like that. So I thank you. It's been very insightful that I'm not the only nurse that thinks that way and just carries on. So you've given me hope is all I can say.
Well, thank you for joining us today, Stefan. My take-home feeling from this conversation is have a plan, but don't let the fear of it not working out stop you from progressing forward. And don't give up. Don't walk away. Yeah. There's always a different option for you.
That's right. It's about taking measured risks.
Yes.
If we look at clinical risk, it's about taking measured risk, but taking risks.
Yeah. No, thank you. This has been a great chat.
Thanks
thank
for
you.
Having me.
We know you're about to go on holidays, so thank you for taking some time out.
Thank
you. That's a wrap for today's VPNG podcast. If you enjoyed hanging out with us, give us a thumbs up, hit the follow button and share the pod love with your friends.
For all the links, details and resources from today's chat, check out the show notes. And hey, got a topic in mind or just want to say hey, shoot us an email at podcast@vpng.org.au.
Until next time, keep well. This is Elise.
And Kate, signing off. Catch you in the next one.